Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have the great basketball historian Tim Gallagher on the line. Tim, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Fred. Kind of the dog days of summer and kind of one of the more quiet times as it relates to basketball. So look forward to talking with you and starting to prepare for the season. And actually got to spend a few minutes with NBA legend Al Bianchi this week here in San Diego. He's in town for the Del Mar races. And hopefully we'll get to get him on the podcast as a guest, but he was an assistant on the original Bulls expansion team back in the day. So great to see Al and kind of feed my basketball Jones a little bit in the summertime. But I look forward to talking with you as your exposure widens as a Bulls expert.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, so much. I mean, I can't wait for that discussion with Al. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to hear what that was like working, obviously, Johnny Ray Kerr, the head coach on that initial Bulls expansion team. Be great to hear some of the stories of those early teams and also his time as GM for the Knicks. But let's get into what's going on now with the beloved as we're marching towards, I think it's somewhere around 55 days only before the opening day. So we're really starting to see the on the horizon, the great big red sun rising. So first question for you, I tweeted this out about a week or so ago. What Bull will have the most cumulative quote-unquote pressure from media and fans for the upcoming Bulls season? And I gave four options: Zach LaVine, Markkanen, Parker, and Dunn. Love to get your take on those four. Who has the most pressure going in to this year? And then I'll share with you what the poll results were.
Sure. Well, for me, that's an easy one. I think it's Zach LaVine, just because of the new contract and the expectations with him coming off the injury and, you know, the glimpses that he showed. But, you know, still some question marks based on the limited amount of time we got to see him play last season. I saw enough flashes that I was excited and encouraged. And I saw him play at UCLA, although his career at UCLA was quite brief also. And, you know, I thought he was not ready for a jump to the NBA, but, you know, he's progressed, and other than that knee injury, was on a nice trajectory as a player. So I feel like it's really on him. I think Markkanen, still being a very young player, I think, you know, the fans will be a little more patient with him. I think with Parker, because of the injury history he's had, there's some, you know, tempered expectations. So I think anything he delivers on a positive standpoint is gravy. With Dunn, I'm assuming he's going to be healthy and stay on the trajectory. I was very skeptical about his ability to score the ball and even lead a team. But again, I saw enough last year in again, smaller sample sizes. The thing I'm really hoping for from the Bulls this year, as I think we all are, is, okay, let's make a playoff run now. You know, enough of these sitting guys, enough of tanking, enough of all of that. Let's put the best team together on the floor, you know, get the rotation down and go for a playoff spot. That's what I'm ready for and expecting. And I think Dunn has shown me enough that, you know, that he's on that trajectory as well. So I think the pressure all lands with Zach.
I agree 100%. It's 76% agreed with you, almost 300 votes. Markkanen had only 6%. Parker had 16, and Dunn had 2. I think Parker, I understand the argument, he's on a one-year deal. There's a lot of pressure, quote-unquote pressure on him. He's in his hometown. I disagree, though, with that kind of assessment or just assumption that, oh, he's in his hometown. There's a lot more pressure. I think for a kid like Parker, so close to his family, kind of like Rose, I think that's almost like a solace in his life, or it's a level of comfort. He basically played in Milwaukee, which is a glorified suburb of Chicago anyhow. So I don't feel like it's a negative that he's playing in this city. He's such a positive force off the court. I think, if anything, most people will be cheering for him and be a little bit more lenient if he plays poorly. Plus, there's really no risk to fans in the medias or the team. There's only a personal financial risk for him. So LaVine, I mean, we've seen how ugly it can get in this town if you do not live up to your contract. And that was, you look at Carlos Boozer, there's the countless examples throughout the history of our organization of that happening. And I agree 100%. If he does not play well, and if he plays like he did last year to start off in year one, it will get ugly very quickly. And I do not think it will be a good thing for the org, but especially for Zach. And these guys pay attention to what's written about them, and they pay attention to how the crowd reacts, I think. So I like all these kids. I think they're all great kids, but I agree, the pressure's on Zach to perform. And, you know, I'm really hoping he lives up to expectations.
Well, and I think he has a certain confidence and swagger. You know, I guess if you're as athletic as him, you certainly have a right to be. And, you know, and it looks like he's coming back, you know, in excellent physical shape from the knee injury. So, you know, he seems to be ready to carry some of the load, and you know, seems to be a very confident player. So, so I think it's, you know, I think he's up to the task. So hopefully he'll deliver on that.
So next topic I'd like to get into is some of these, this Las Vegas poll that came out, Las Vegas win totals that came out, and you know, a lot of the fan base were disappointed or wringing their hands over the fact that the both major lines, BetOnline and Westgate, had the Bulls at 28 wins, 28 and a half right now. Actually, it's moved up to 29 and a half for Westgate. So what that means in general, in case people understand this, is Vegas sets these lines trying to get equal amount of betting on both sides. So, you know, that's, you got to keep that in perspective. The general outlook on the Bulls and the fan base has been so overtly negative over the past few years. I think that's had something to do with it. The Bulls have beat their Las Vegas prediction total for the last two seasons. I expect them to do the same this year. Were you surprised with that number?
I thought it was low. I thought it was really low, actually. And we'll get to where I think things are going to align in the East, at least for the top eight slots. And I have the Bulls for 43 wins. I was thinking from a, you know, a skeptical standpoint of, you know, of Las Vegas, or looking at an over-under. I was surprised it wasn't closer to 34 or 35. So I was surprised it was under 30. I think that's low, especially based on the transactions that the Bulls have had, and basically, you know, last year getting 27 wins with the, you know, not trying to win much at all, right?
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
So I thought that was low. You know, there were some other teams I was a little surprised at as well, but overall, you know, they're obviously pretty well on the mark in most cases, I think.
Just with the fact that the Bulls play in the Eastern Conference, so 52 of their games are going to be in this Eastern Conference, where I can only say that I think there's six teams that are clearly probably better than the Bulls. I would say, you know, in the top tier, it's clear to me that I like the Raptors. I think the Raptors are the best team. If Kawhi Leonard shows up and plays as good as he can, I think that's the best team in the East, with Boston close second and Philly, you know, third. I think they're on the tier of themselves. And in tier two, three teams, I got Milwaukee, Indiana, and the Wizards. The Wizards are, who knows what's going to happen with them. I mean, there's so many. They could be a great team, or they could, you know, add in Dwight Howard, or that could be a disaster. But after that, at number seven, I have the Bulls. And, you know, I know some people have thrown out Miami. Some people have thrown out the Pistons. Those teams have, especially the Pistons, have done nothing but disappoint in recent years. I don't feel like they're, you know, clearly better talent-wise than the Bulls. I mean, obviously Blake is great, but that team's an injury-plagued team that you not very deep, that I expect to have more of the same. In Miami, really? I mean, all their best players on the downside of their career. James Johnson's one of their best players. I mean, you know, I just match up team after team after team, and I think the Bulls' talent is better than most teams in the East.
That's funny you mentioned that, because I've got it charted right here. I've got my 1 through 8 for the East, you know, looking at the conference, and I have the Bulls in the seventh slot. So I've got Celtics 1, Raptors 2, Sixers 3, Pacers 4, Bucks 5, Wizards 6, and I think the Bulls, I actually have the Bulls and Wizards both at 43 wins. So I, you know, figure out the tiebreaker, right? So the Bulls are maybe 6 or 7, and I have the Heat in the 8th spot. You know, I could see the Pistons, you know, maybe also challenging for the 8th spot. I agree with you on the Heat's roster. I just am a big Eric Spoelstra fan and like what he does with whatever hand he's dealt from a talent standpoint. But there's a lot of big question marks on that team as well. You know, what are you going to get with Hassan Whiteside?
Nothing.
Right. Who's your best player? Is, you know, Dragic? You know, who,
probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, it isn't that exciting. I mean, he's a solid player, but if that's your best player, that's, you know, you couldn't really confidently say that's a playoff team. Detroit is interesting with Dwayne Casey as the new coach. I think the change of leadership there is going to be positive eventually. I don't know if it's going to happen right away and how, you know, how that's going to mesh. Like you said, you got Blake Griffin, you got Drummond, Reggie Jackson's had his ups and downs and injuries. So, but I could see them challenging for the eighth spot along with Miami, but everybody below that, I'm with you. And I don't think Cleveland, even though they've signed Kevin Love and they have a few veterans from the LeBron era, coming back, there's no way I could see them as a top six or seven team in that conference, even if all goes well.
Agree 100%. It's amazing, Tim. We did not talk. You did not listen to my Locked On Bulls appearance.
I didn't.
Great minds think alike. We were both thinking the exact same thing. I think talent-wise, I think the Bulls are absolutely there. Question for you about Fred Hoiberg, though. Like, what number of wins do you feel that the Bulls should, at a minimum, expect? And if they don't reach that, do you think his job is in jeopardy?
Well, I see the number as probably being, you know, worst case, you know, he needs to win 41 games, right? They need to be 500 at worst. And I think you justify that based on, well, it's still a rebuild. You've got a very young team. You probably know off the top of your head, I don't know, in terms of the age of the roster. I know they're one of the younger teams in the league. So, you know, they're still in that development phase and the rebuild after a tanking year last year. So I think he gets a little bit of a grace period with that. But I think the expectations, the signing of Parker, the commitment to this young core, you know, I think it's not unrealistic. And I think it is a real, a real expectation to at minimum be at 500 and make the playoffs. I mean, that's my low end of the expectation. And if that's not met, I think it's probably time to make a coaching change. Unless there's some unusual factors like injuries or, whatever variables might come in to kind of throw things off track. But we've seen progress and development of the young guys, or you see Markkanen still on the trajectory. Levine's playing well. But I think if all those things were happening, then their record should be better than 500, right? So,
sure.
So that's where I'm seeing it.
What other of those season win totals I sent over to you really caught your eye? Like, this is too high or this is too low?
Well, I'm still a 76ers doubter.
I agree. That was what I caught. 54.5 is the over-under. And I would take the under all day on that. I think they'll win probably somewhere in the 40s, but I do not have them win more than 55 games. I think it's utterly insane, especially with losing Bell and Ellie, who made a ton of big shots for them. It's when they went on that big run at the end of the year. Bell,
right.
And
Ilyasova's gone also, right? So yeah. A couple of key veteran guys. And I know we talked about this before, where that strange win streak they had late in the season, you know, the teams they played during that streak were just the, you know, the pits of the league at the time. And again, I'm not totally dissing the Sixers overall. They, you know, Embiid, Simmons are in very intriguing young talent, and you know, Saric is an interesting player, and you know, obviously Redick's an established veteran, but you know, I had them for 47 wins, which, you know, still third in the East, but so that was one on the list that surprised me a little bit. I think the Lakers at 48.5, even picking up LeBron, to have a plus 13 basically on the win side for a team that was pretty dismal last year, plus all the other odd components that the Lakers have put on the roster, from JaVale McGee to Lance Stephenson and on, you know, to get all that to mesh, I just don't see them at 48 and a half wins.
How about the Spurs at 44 and a half?
Yeah, that was a little low as well, I thought.
I agree.
Because considering what the Spurs went last year without Kawhi, I've got it right here somewhere. They were at 47 without Kawhi all of last year, and that dark cloud kind of hovering over him, over the team, and that uncertainty. So, speaking of your guy Bellinelli, he's back in a Spurs uniform. I think DeRozan's going to be a good fit there.
Yes.
And even in a strong West, I see the Spurs winning closer to 50 games.
A couple teams that caught my eye. Utah Jazz at 48.5 I thought was too high. I'm not a buyer yet. I think they're a good team. I think they're winning 45. I don't see them winning 49 or more. Another number caught my eye was Portland at 42.5 That's pretty low for a team that was pretty good last year.
Right. They won 49 last year, and there was a point, I think even around the All-Star break, where Portland was still hovering around 500, if memory serves me correctly. They were kind of floundering a bit, then they put it together. And again, I know they play out west and maybe aren't on the national radar as much, but when you've got a backcourt like Lillard and McCollum, and then they've got a good young core of guys around them, and even guys that didn't play a lot last year, like Zach Collins from Gonzaga that was a rookie last year but showed some signs. And I think they've got an intriguing roster and a talented roster, and I agree with you that the win total that they listed for Portland, I thought was a little bit low. And I think the Pelicans are going to have a little bit of a dip also.
Yeah, agree 100%. 44.5 I think they're going to be, right around 41.500 team to fall short of that. And the Bucks too was the other one, 45.5 I'm like, I'm not sure I'm a big believer in the Bucks. I mean, they got a much better coach, so that's going to help, but I don't really like that team outside of Giannis. Middleton, too. Now, Pacers was the other one. 46.5 I don't know, man. I mean, I think a lot of that is just based on a good series against the Cavs and LeBron, but, how good was
that? Yeah, well, they did win 48 last year.
Yeah. So you would go on over on that one.
Well, I've got the Pacers. My list has I have them at 46, so my prediction is 46 wins. So, so kind of right in that ballpark, but a little less than what that Vegas was saying.
Yeah, the worst team they have is the Atlanta Hawks, which I agree with 100% at 24.5 slightly better than them are the Sacramento Kings at 26.5 And then they have the Bulls and Suns at 28.5 And I think the Bulls, I think we're all in agreement here, the Bulls are going to win more than that.
Yes.
So, Tim, let's talk about some of the great legends, NBA players that have passed on since our last discussion, if you don't mind. We'll wrap this baby up, the latest episode of the Chicago Bullseye.
Sure. Yeah, I always like to try to touch on that and also put it a little bit in context so the listeners that maybe haven't followed the game for many, many decades like I have can have some appreciation of it and how it's kind of impacted today's game. So there are a couple of players that passed away in July. One was Frank Ramsey, who was 86 years old. And what's notable about him is he played at Kentucky for the legendary Adolph Rupp and was on the 1951 NCAA championship team, but then went on to the Boston Celtics playing for Red Auerbach and won 7 titles. But the thing that's notable about him, and he's a Hall of Fame player, but he was the original sixth man. So they coined the term sixth man, first guy off the bench, due to Frank Ramsey. So, and it was kind of a great psychological tool that Red Auerbach had to keep players on the bench engaged, and a player like Ramsey. But they liked his energy and scoring off the bench, and so it became a kind of a standard term. And obviously now it's part of the ongoing language of basketball, and there's the Sixth Man of the Year award, but he was the first one to be called that. And even as he was kind of winding down his career, they drafted John Havlicek out of Ohio State, and he served as an apprentice under Ramsey as a sixth man, and that kind of continued on with the Celtics, even with players, you know, future Hall of Famers like Kevin McHale was a sixth man when he first started. So kind of a really cool tradition that started with Ramsey and the Celtics, and then obviously has been adopted throughout the league and with basketball. So so Frank Ramsey is the first one. Second player that was notable that passed away in July is Lonnie Shelton at 62 years old. And his claim to fame was being a power forward on the Seattle Sonics 1979 title team. And what was interesting is in 78, Seattle got to the finals and lost to the Bullets in their center. And Shelton was not on that team. He was on the Knicks. So the center on the 78 Seattle team that got to the finals but lost to the Bullets was Marvin the Human Eraser Webster. He was the center. Jack Sikma was a power forward, and John Johnson was the other forward. And Marvin Webster ended up signing with the Knicks as a free agent. And free agency was a little different in those days, but the Knicks signed him and had to pay compensation to Seattle for that signing. And so the compensation was Lonnie Shelton. And so when Seattle picked up Lonnie Shelton, they were able to move Jack Sikma to center, put Lonnie Shelton at power forward, and the Sonics went on and won the title. So
a lot of people
thought losing Marvin Webster was going to set them back, and instead it worked out even better for chemistry and got guys in kind of more true positions. But Lonnie Shelton was like a Maurice Lucas, Charles Oakley kind of enforcer, but, you know, had a decent shooting touch, but just, you know, one of those thick body, you know, redwoods that at the power forward spot in those days. So very, very solid player. And living here in San Diego, his son ended up playing at San Diego State and had a real nice career and played with Kawhi Leonard on those teams, and not good enough to play at the NBA level, but is now coaching in college basketball, Tim Shelton. And then finally, just recently, at age 89, Bob Bass passed away. And the listeners may know of him a little bit as an executive, mostly with the Spurs and Hornets, but, you know, coached in the old ABA and actually was part of the Spurs organization when the merger happened in 76. So when the ABA's four teams that came over, so it was the Nets, Pacers, Nuggets, and Spurs. Bob Bass was the GM of San Antonio. In fact, he was the GM of the Spurs from 74 to 94. And I know most people think of Popovich and R.C. Buford and, you know, the David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and that the Spurs winning culture was established then. But it really started with Bob Bass, actually, and some of the great teams he had in the 70s and 80s.
And, for the ABA?
Even in the final days of the ABA. And coaches like Doug Moe and Stan Albeck, who coached the Bulls during the early Jordan years. Bob Bass also had coaches in San Antonio like Cotton Fitzsimmons and Larry Brown. So this is pre-Popovich, but very successful. The other interesting thing that Bulls fans will be happy to know is when Bob Bass was the GM of the Spurs in 1983, he drafted a guard out of Notre Dame named John Paxson. So Pax played his first 2 years as a Spur before getting moved to the Bulls as compensation for an Artis Gilmore transaction. And obviously the rest is history and what John's had as an impact on the Bulls organization. But a couple other notable things as we wrap up about Bob Bass. So his 20 years with the Spurs, they were in the playoffs 17 of those 20 years as a GM. So that's a pretty solid track record.
Wow.
And then when he was GM of the Hornets, when they were in New Orleans, they never had a losing season in the 7 years he was there. And he was NBA Executive of the Year two different times, once with the Spurs and once with the Hornets. And he has the notoriety of also drafting David Robinson in 87. And kind of an interesting twist of fate is when he was GM of the Hornets, he actually drafted Kobe Bryant.
Oh, right. The trade to the Lakers.
But traded
to
the Lakers. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, quite a colorful an interesting character and kind of another one of those basketball lifers that was a college coach, ABA coach, NBA coach and executive, and had his hand in a lot of good teams and drafting of with a lot of good players. So anyway, I just wanted to remember those three who passed away this summer that were very impactful guys in basketball history.
Tim, it's always a pleasure to have you on the Bullseye. Looking forward to now we're starting to get a little bit closer to opening day. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about, so hopefully weekly or at least every other week to have you on the show and get your expertise. Looking forward to having you on as this very key and pivotal year starts out. Only a month, really 60 days away, just under 60 days. So really looking forward to it, brother.
Likewise, Fred. Always a pleasure.
All the best to you, Tim. Have a great weekend, my man.
You too.
Talk to you soon.